You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan, one of the largest volume Nissan dealers in the GTA. Shop the Nissan Now sales event online at ScarboroughNissan.com or in person on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Gord Miller, Dave Festchuk here with you, now on TSN 2, and of course on TSN 1050 and the TSN app. Brian Hayes is on vacation, which means two things. One, he's relaxed, rested. And two, something huge happens in sports. It always happens to Hayes.
It's very true.
Usually with the Raptors.
Very true. I believe when the Kawhi trade was consummated last summer, Mr. Hayes was on vacation.
He was. And so he is going to join us minutes from now because he just cannot stay home.
I'm still half expecting him to rush in here, elbow you in the head, take your chair.
Here's some takes. He loves his takes.
Yes, he does.
You can't have opinions. You can't have thoughts. You have to have takes because that's the thing, right? Everything's got to be a take.
Well, he's got a very stylized way of speaking, and it works for him.
It does. And so we're very happy he's going to be calling in. We're going to talk to Mark Masters from Wimbledon and a heartbreaking defeat for Milos Raonic today. Up two sets. Serving for the match in the fourth set, lost in five. You know, it was right there for him.
I mean, it was.
After the first week, it looked like it was right there for him.
Looked like it was all breaking his way this year.
Yeah, and so we'll talk to Mark about Milos picking up the pieces and where he goes from here. But that's all coming up. And, of course, we're still digesting the Kawhi news. And I'm curious because you started covering the Raptors in 1998. And I, you know, worked on those games in the mid-90s, when they played in the baseball stadium and there was nobody there. We used to joke that, this is true. I had a guy who bought Leaf season tickets, and you had to take Raptor tickets with
you. That's right. That was very, very, very much part of the business plan back then.
He used to give me the Raptor tickets. He said, just get rid of these for me.
Yeah.
I went to a neighbor. Hey, want to take your son to the Raptor game today? No, I'm good. No, they're free. Like, you can go see an NBA game for free. No, I'm good. So we used to joke that if you put two Raptor tickets in your windshield when you came back, there'd be four.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But look at them now. Like, when you see people in this city, everywhere you go, talking basketball, talking Kawhi, I mean, it's been a remarkable journey.
It really has. You know, we had Jack Armstrong on earlier in the show, and he started broadcasting games the year I started covering games, which happened to be Vince's rookie year, which was really the first time basketball became the hot thing in town. Although, not on the scale it is now, clearly. But Vince, for a moment there, you know, Vince, you could make a case, was the most famous basketball player on the planet.
Yeah.
After he won that dunk contest in Oakland in 2000, you know, there was nobody bigger in the NBA at the time. There were guys as big. I mean, Shaq was still in his prime, and Kobe was there. And you know, obviously, you know, Jordan had retired and would come back. But Vince was as big as it got because he was a nightly fixture on ESPN. But from there, you know, things got bad. And you're talking about the era when tickets were worth nothing, basically. And MLSC's business plan was essentially, let's leverage the Leafs' popularity to be able to at least make a case that there's a business model to make the Raptors sustainable and not a drain on us.
And you know what? When Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, during the lockout year in 2004-05, when the NHL lost an entire season, they tried to refund one-third of the suite holders' fees.
Yeah.
Then you sold the Raptors and the concerts. And the suite holders, no.
That's not one-third.
We don't pay $200,000 for that suite a year for the Raptors. We pay for the Leafs.
Right.
And so I think it's great. I think the biggest thing about the Raptors was the idea that it was a place where guys didn't want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a long trail of, even Damon Stoudemire kind of, not to say forced his way out.
Well, he did.
Got his way out.
Yeah, he got out.
Got his way out.
Tracy McGrady.
Vince Carter.
Did not want to come back.
Chris Bosh. You know, there was an endless procession of guys that didn't want to play here.
And wasn't it interesting that as this team rose through the playoffs, all those guys who wanted out, Chris Bosh, who was, you know, in the mind of management at the time, was kind of duplicitous about how he felt and really didn't tell them he wanted out, but did get out and hurt the Raptors because of it, because they couldn't trade him. You know, Vince Carter, who did want out and forced his way out. Tracy McGrady. All those guys came around and wanted to associate themselves with this franchise and leverage the fact they played for the Raptors to further their media careers Isn't it interesting how that works?
It is funny. You know, the guy who was the one great Raptor who didn't ask out was DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah. And look what happened to him.
And that was the gamble that Masai Ujiri took last year, was to trade a guy who was the all-time leading scorer in franchise history, by a lot. The all-time leader in games played. Arguably, I think, the greatest player in franchise history at that point.
At that point, he probably was.
Arguably was. I mean, you could say Vince was better at times, but Vince won a slam dunk contest. He was not necessarily...
Yeah, Vince peaked at 23. Let's not sugarcoat it.
To move him out and to take the chance on Kawhi Leonard, who might not have come, and all the thing, and was injured, was really, as Jack Armstrong said in the last hour, one of the most daring gambles ever made. So it's a really fascinating story. So we don't normally take calls on Overdrive. But is Brian from Durham Region, are you on the line?
Yeah, first time, short time, boys. very rarely do I tune into a program like this, but thank you for taking calls this afternoon. I appreciate it.
To be clear, taking call.
Right, taking one call.
Call.
You squeezed me in, and I appreciate it.
So I want to know, first of all, where were you, and how'd you find out?
I'll never forget this. This, of all the sporting moments in my life, this one I most certainly will not forget, because I was dead asleep. I was asleep. It was 3 a.m. And my wife, we got a 9-week-old at home, so my wife is up every 2 hours, and I'm up with her every 2 hours, making sure I'm there for support, of course.
But absolutely.
Yeah. And
lies. Oh, he lies. Yeah.
She is on a text chain with a bunch of friends, and one of her friends is from L.A. and lives in L.A. Not a Clipper fan, though, a Laker fan. Anyway, so her text messaging started blowing up, saying Kawhi has chosen the Clippers. She didn't believe it. She looked into it. She jumped on her own Twitter account, started Googling, finding out what was going on. And, again, I'm out like a light, but I guess I moved, like, briefly. So she decided, okay, I'm going to pretend like he's awake. And she started kind of whispering to me, asking if I was awake, but doing so by shoving me at the same time. And so I woke up. It's 3 a.m. And I get the news that Kawhi Leonard has signed with the L.A. Clippers. And I was up for the next, like, 4 hours. I couldn't go back to sleep because my mind was racing. I start jumping on Twitter. I start reading different reports and trying to get the details. And we find out at the same time Paul George has been traded right to the Clippers, and maybe the Raptors were in on that. So it was a sporting experience I wish I did not go through, considering the result. But it's something I'll never forget.
How do you feel about it?
It's crushing. I mean, I don't know why that's so difficult for people to acknowledge. You know, there's two separate Kawhi Leonard stories now in terms of the history of Toronto. The one in 2018-2019 will never be forgotten. He put forth the greatest season in franchise history, maybe the greatest season in Toronto sports history, led them to a title. And that is a storybook that was written, was concluded. The book was closed. It will be cherished. It will be memorized. And it will be recited forever. You know, we'll never, ever forget that. But this is a different story. You know, this is the drama, and this is the heartbreak. And I've been kind of confused by the reaction, you know, like this sense of obligation to thank Kawhi. Of course we thank Kawhi for what he did when he was playing here. You know, 2 million people showed up at the parade to thank Kawhi Leonard. He'll always be a legend in the city because of what he did. But I don't understand why it's so difficult to acknowledge that this is crushing, that he could have stayed, but he decided to leave. And I heard you guys off the top, and you were saying, you know, he decided to play the GM of the LA Clippers. I would argue he also decided to play life coach for Paul George. Mm-hmm. And in a way, he kind of decided to play GM for the Oklahoma City Thunder. So, you know, there's a lot of bitterness that goes around. I don't blame Kawhi. He was a free agent. He never guaranteed anything. He's entitled to do whatever he wants. But this idea that Paul George just demands a trade and Sam Presti in Oklahoma City are like, okay, sure. Yeah, we'll go ahead and do that for you. Now, they got an incredible haul, but he's their best player.
Yeah.
You know, it's an incredible story, but long story short, I'm not over it. I don't think I will be over it. It's going to change the future of the Raptors drastically, and it sucks that he's not going to be a Raptor anymore.
Well, that's an interesting one, Hayes, because you know Miller and I were just talking about, do you honor Kawhi Leonard? Like Gord was saying, maybe they should build a statue eventually of the shot against the Sixers, the four bouncer that propels you further in an NBA championship run. How do you feel about that?
The statue is interesting because, again, it commemorates the moments. And, you know, the biggest moments throughout the playoff run were clearly at the hands of Kawhi Leonard. So, you know, if that's what comes with it, you know, with every statue comes a plaque. And I guess if you're going to describe the moment, that would be one thing I guess I could get behind. I'm totally against retiring his number.
Oh, yeah.
No. Totally against
that. That would be desperate, wouldn't it? That would smack of
remarkably desperate and insecure. You know, like yes, I think he knows how we feel about him. He's well aware. You know, he's again, and he's always going to be revered for what he did when he was here. But he was here for 1 year, and there's a lot of different ways to spin it. There's a lot of different realities to the story, and I'm sure it's multi-layered. Sadly, because of who he is, we're never going to get the full story. He's not going to reveal it. But this is just a fact. He is no different than Chris Bosh, Tracy McGrady. The first second he had an opportunity to leave, he left.
Well, I
think
the
first second he could leave, he left. So I love him for what he did. I'll never forget it for that 1 year. But 1 year does not lead to a jersey retirement. No way.
Do you think he strung the Raptors along a bit? You know, going to the Blue Jay game, even wearing a Jays, you know, jersey down in the Caribbean, like it, going to Niagara Falls, like it seemed like. Do you think he sort of strung this along and never intended to come back?
No, I'm not sure he ever intended to come back. You know, I think it was he had three great options at the end of the day. When you think about it, he had his two teams in his hometown, and he had a team he just won a title with where they had a real opportunity to do it again, and a fan base that again, he's a god in Toronto. So the three options were incredible. I'm sure he considered the Raptors. I'm sure it was something that went through his mind. I don't look at, you know, Niagara Falls and the Blue Jay game and all that as a part of this at all. But I do think him flying up here, my belief is that was a part of the chess game. You know, and Kawhi Leonard, I give him all the credit in the world because he is ruthless, and a lot of these guys are ruthless. Owners are ruthless. GMs are ruthless. Coaches are ruthless. Players are ruthless.
Uncles are ruthless.
Yes, they're all ruthless. And I think in the end, this was that kind of stunt, you know, him flying up here to Toronto and staying here for a couple of days was to achieve two things. One, to buy time for Paul George to demand the trade. And for Oklahoma City to start working out, okay, are we going to do this? And if we are, what do we need in return? And then I think it was also to force the Clippers' hand. And it was a brilliant move because I think in the end, he always wanted to go to the Clippers, but he wanted to go to the Clippers with help. And it's a brilliant move. I mean, before he even got on the plane, that report is out there. He said, if you get Paul George, I'm yours. So getting on that plane, he was not fully committed to ever negotiating with the Raptors if the Clippers were going to find a way to acquire Paul George. So I think he was buying his time, and he was forcing the Clippers' hand, and he got everything that he wanted. And I salute him for that because, I mean, that's a brilliant chess move, multiple moves. And he was always looking two or three steps ahead, and he got exactly what he wanted in the end. And if that's what he wanted, then that means being a Raptor was not ultimately what he wanted.
Yeah, and I know the Raptors feel like they were ultimately used as leverage in the negotiation, right? That they were able, the Sam Presti with the Oklahoma City Thunder was able to extract the maximum return from the Clippers because the Raptors were also involved, and obviously there's also the threat of the Lakers. But should we feel badly, Hayes, that the Raptors were used as leverage? Because all it really says is that Kawhi Leonard is cutthroat. Kawhi Leonard, all the reasons he won you a title, that he's a cutthroat, stone-faced, poker-playing killer, the reasons he's great on the court, it all translated off the court.
Absolutely. Like, that again, is something that I salute, man. I really do, because some people feed this idea that Kawhi Leonard is aloof or is a guy who, you know, isn't paying attention to anything.
Oh, yeah.
And is just going about his business and just is a robot or a cyborg, and that's not true. It's never been true. And this is clear evidence of that. This guy knows the game. He knows how to play the game. I mean, how often did we hear a year ago when we were doing the rounds trying to get intel on Kawhi after the Raptors have acquired him, and everyone said, man, he doesn't say anything. He doesn't talk. You go up there and you try to talk to him, and there's no back and forth. And then all of a sudden this summer, he's calling Kevin Durant. He's calling Paul George.
Kevin Durant's calling. Whoa, that surprised me.
He talks when he wants to talk, and he talks when he's got an initiative and he's going to follow through on that. And it was a brilliant plan that came together. I feel bad for Raptor fans. I don't feel bad for the Raptors because they're a part of this whole industry. I mean, that's pro sports
right. Here's what I don't like, Brian. Here's what I don't like that Kawhi Leonard did. I don't think you should be calling players who are under contract to other teams and saying, get yourself traded to the Clippers and I'll sign there as a free agent. Like, I think at some point for the integrity of the NBA and for their smaller franchises, and we see this all the time, guys get traded all the time with a year to go in their deal, a year and a half to go. We know that LeBron James recruited Anthony Davis. We know that, who had 2 years to go in his contract. At some point, the NBA has to say, this can't happen anymore.
Well, I tend to agree with you, Gord. Now, it's easy to say it because in our city, we're on the losing end. You know, people in L.A. that are Clipper fans, they don't care about that sentiment whatsoever.
No, but Oklahoma City's on the losing end of it. I mean, if you woke up in Oklahoma City on Saturday morning, your first question is, why is my team getting blown up because Kawhi Leonard of the Raptors wants to sign with the Clippers?
Absolutely.
What's that got to do with me?
I have no idea how they would explain that. I don't know how Adam Silver can or will explain it, but this is not a new phenomenon. I mean, again, Kawhi's just playing the game. He didn't create the rules. He's just playing the game. This game's been ongoing in the NBA for quite some time, and it's only going to continue. And the reality is, it's on the individual teams to step up and say no. And that's why, again, I think if you're a Raptor fan,
I disagree. I think it's up to the league. I think the NBA has to say no.
Okay.
Two things. If Kawhi was under contract for next year and Paul George was the free agent, and Paul George called Kawhi and said, get yourself out of Toronto and we'll play together in the Clippers, we'd be outraged.
Absolutely.
We would be outraged. And the second part of it is, you can't call players and meet with players from other teams who are under contract and conspire to go play somewhere else. They're under contract to someone else.
Listen, Gord, you're preaching to the choir, but it's the Wild West right now in the NBA, and quite frankly, I think the NBA feels like it's actually a beneficial movement because of the amount of buzz it creates. There's no such thing as bad press. You know, okay, there are going to be some hurt feelings, but there's also going to be a lot of people that are really happy and a lot of people that aren't primarily involved, in this case, Toronto, Oklahoma City, L.A., that are fascinated with it and can't wait to throw on TSN or throw on ESPN or watch TNT. So I don't think they really care enough. I think they actually promote it in a way with their inaction. But I don't know how or what Adam Silver would possibly do to stop it. And really, I think this is why I say it's on the GMs. Sam Presti could have said no. Like, sorry, Paul, you're our best player. We're not trading you.
You're right.
Well,
like,
you can't do that.
I mean,
why can't you do that?
Because you got a guy doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, but Kawhi Leonard didn't want to be here this year. You wouldn't know it.
We don't know that. He never said that.
Well, Gord, come on. We knew he didn't want to be here. Like, I give him full credit because he never showed it, and he went out there and played his ass off every single night. But there are a lot of players in every league that don't want to be where they're at. But sorry, you signed the contract, you got to play. But if you're just going to capitulate and be like, okay, forget it, it's not my problem, you know, talk to the commissioner in New York, then this is what we're going to get. You know, you're getting the Wild West. You're getting the players are running the league.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to find out if it's ever going to have a ripple effect on the other sports, because the NBA is so far gone, you know, where the players dominate everything in terms of player movement. Other leagues, I wonder if they're going to get to that point, because I'm sure they'd love to. Why wouldn't the players want to be empowered?
Yeah, but I wonder what the difference is, right, Hayes? I mean, Connor McDavid, as good as he is and as well-paid as he is, he's the best player in the league, the highest-paid guy in the league, he's still on a terrible team, right? Like, there's no scenario where a guy of that stature in the NBA can be on a terrible team because you affect the team so much as one guy. Whereas in the NHL, you know, one guy can't move the needle like that.
No, he can't, but they can. They can attempt to you know, hold their own destiny in their own hands.
Right.
You know, like in the NBA, the equivalent of Connor McDavid would have just been, he would have been gone by now.
Right.
You know, it would have just been like,
he'd be long gone.
He'd be long gone. You know, with all due respect to Edmonton, it would have just been, I'm not doing this anymore. Where in the NHL, it would be shocking news.
Right.
If we woke up tomorrow and found out that Connor McDavid has not only demanded a trade, but has said, I'm only going to one of these two or three teams. On top of that, I'm talking to players on other teams, and they're going to start doing this too and demand it, and we're going to build up a super team in Toronto or New York or Montreal or Chicago. It just, it's impossible to believe we'd ever get there in the NHL, but why not? Connor McDavid is just as powerful as LeBron James.
The difference is the NHL can't allow it. The NHL depends more on ticket revenue than the NBA does by far. And the fact that pissed off NBA fans are in New Orleans, Oklahoma City, and Toronto speaks volumes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? That, I mean... Let's be honest here. I mean, they cater to their big markets because that's where the TV money comes from.
Absolutely.
So that's,
and that the money is astronomical, and also because the money is so high, these guys are willing to take pay cuts and still go wherever they want to go. Like Kawhi Leonard left $50 million on the table. $50 million. He's still going to make $140 million.
Right.
So he's like, what do I care about that $50 million, man? I want to live in LA with a super team and I'll make it up on the side with New Balance and with other endorsement deals.
So, and that's the other part of it, right? Is how much actors outside of the league played a role in this.
Yeah.
Shoe companies, all of it, right? Play a role in this.
I mean, I got to believe, you know, the lure of the American market, the Clippers, even though they're a secondary team in that market, and they will continue to be, they're going to be on ESPN more. They're going to be on TNT more. They're going to get way more play. But I believe, you know, if I'm New Balance, I would prefer to have Kawhi in Toronto than Kawhi with the Clippers, because you're talking 35 million people up here that love him and cannot get enough of him. He's going to get lost in LA. He will. It's still, that's a Laker town. That's LeBron town. I'm not even sure, you know, on any given night, he's going to be bigger or better than Paul George, who is also a local son, you know, of Southern California and LA. We're up here, you know, it was all Kawhi Leonard all the time. And that's another thing, you know, on a side note that I hope kind of changes as we move forward. We all would agree and would acknowledge that the Raptors can and will not win that title without Kawhi Leonard. I mean, that goes without saying. But he has taken up 95% of the tire pumping. And I think a lot of that was from a recruitment standpoint. You know, like, we've got to hook up Kawhi with all the love. It's got to be all about Kawhi Leonard. You know, when they had the parade downtown, the key to the city was handed out to him. Why wasn't it given to Kyle Lowry?
Yeah.
Lowry's been here the longest. Lowry's the guy that re-signed multiple times. That was blatantly a stunt. That was, we got to make sure he's in the front. We got to make sure he gets all the love. I hope moving forward, it's not considered, you know, Kawhi Leonard's championship. It's Kyle Lowry's title. Siakam's title, Gasol's title, and Kawhi's clearly still a part of it and a massive part of it. But I hope this allows us to show some more love to the other guys who are on that team, because, you know, they supplied Kawhi Leonard with an opportunity to win his second title. And, you know, we kept hearing ever since he got here, he wants to be healthy, he wants to win titles, and he wants to build trust. Well, that's why I thought the Raptors were the clear favorites to win this out, because they resuscitated his career. They just won a title. If he returned next year, they'd be, I think, the favorites across the NBA. And clearly, he's built up trust with their staff, with the players, with ownership, et cetera. So, I mean, that's another part of it that makes it so disappointing. But I hope as we move forward, you know, Kawhi continues to get his love, which he should. But the other guys get a lot of love, too.
So that was Brian from Durham Region. Now, let me ask you a question here. If Marner signs or signs an offer sheet, are you calling back in?
So I will be driving in.
Oh, yeah. At that point. I knew it. You'll be knocking me out of this chair, won't you?
Like, well, just... no, I'll leave you. It's your chair, Gordo. You know that. I wouldn't possibly do that. But I don't see it happening. I have not.
You're on
seen
vacation. It has to happen.
Well, I know that's true. If because I'm away, it'll be the Habs or it'll be Boston or it'll be something just so
the Clippers.
The Clippers will somehow offer sheet him, but I don't know. He's got to deal with his own business. By no means does he, he's not going to trigger a contract negotiation because he knows the city is feeling glum over Kawhi Leonard leaving. But man, would it be an opportunity for people to jump right back on his bandwagon because, the city's not feeling so good when it comes to pro sports. But I'm not holding my breath. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
Go on vacation. Get out.
I'm out of here.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Good takes from Brian Hayes.
Outstanding caller from Durham Region.
If all callers could be like that, we'd take calls
more. We'd take more calls.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so that was Brian Hayes. Still to come, we'll talk to Mark Masters from Swinging London, our version of Austin Powers. We'll join us to talk with Milos Raonic and a really tough loss today in the round of 16 at Wimbledon. That's still to come. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and watching on TSN2. Gord Miller sitting in for Brian Hayes with Dave Festchuk. Bad loss for Milos Raonic today at Wimbledon. Really tough. Up two sets to love. He won 20 of his first 21 service points.
Man, his serve has been on fire.
33 aces in the match. Lost the third set, no problem. Got up in the fourth set, but then lost that and lost the fifth and is out in the round of 16 at Wimbledon. In a year when it looked like it was all going right for him. Healthy, finally, serving well, playing well. But a really disappointing pill for him to swallow. And joining us now from SW19 in London, I think that's where he stays, is our Mark Masters. Mark, are you in SW19?
Yes, I'm just at a flat. I can see the grounds of the All England Club from our balcony here. It's quiet. It's quiet right now.
It would be, because it's nighttime, and they don't play at night there. So normally don't play at night. Tell us a little bit. Give us sort of the top line on Raonic's match today.
Milos Raonic ran out of gas at the worst time. But even before he got to the later stages of the match where he was really starting to fade in the fifth set, he had a chance to serve it out in the fourth set at 5-3, and he just played a really loose game and maybe got a little bit tight. And, your mind wanders, certainly knowing that the guy he would have played if he had won, Roberto Bautista Agut, is someone he's 5-0 against. I mean, it was all out in front of him on the table there to make another Wimbledon semifinal, and who knows, after that you give yourself the chance. So, he got tight in that moment maybe a little bit, and maybe he goes back to the third set. He let Guido Pella off the mat, and he let the Argentine believe that he could come back. And the guy was a fighter. It was the first time he'd been this far to Grand Slam, and right, he's going to make the most of it. And yeah, but the top line is Milos Raonic ran out of gas.
So you spoke to him after. I mean, how did he explain, squandering a two-set lead?
Well, he was pretty, obviously, as you'd expect, crestfallen, really, really down. He didn't even want to talk about basketball, which is all he's wanted to talk about when we've been interviewing him throughout Wimbledon.
Well, no one's happy about basketball right now, Masters. Newsflash.
I said to him, at least it wasn't the Lakers, and he said, yeah, whatever, it's been a tough few days.
Yeah.
He was really plugged into this. He was actually saying he was happy that his matches were early, so he knew that it was too early for any news to break because it wouldn't be in his mind. But, a rough few days for Milos Raonic as a Raptors fan as well. So, yeah, he was down. He was really down. I mean, he said he also ran out of gas at the Australian Open when he lost in the quarterfinals there to Luca Pui. So he's saying it's now, this is twice this season, at crucial moments that he's faded at the worst possible time. And he's going to sit down. He's a very kind of cerebral guy, constantly kind of trying to find out how to maximize his potential. And he's fallen. I mean, this is going to sting for a while to have the opportunity that was lying there in front of him to be favored to make a semifinal at Wimbledon. You just don't know how many chances you're going to get like this as you move forward. So he was really down, and he just, it's funny. He said it played out exactly how he said it would before the match. He's like, listen, I can't get into long rallies. I can't let this guy feel good. And as soon as, Pella got a read on his serve and started to extend some of the points, even though he wasn't winning the games, he was starting to get into a rhythm, and eventually he was able to get back in the match. And once the momentum got going that way, Raonic was in trouble.
And Mark, he looked as good in week one as he's looked in years.
Yeah, for sure. It was incredible. You know, before the tournament, he sounded pretty down. He was coming off this back injury. Even though he made, you know, the semis at Stuttgart, he had to withdraw before he would have played Felix Auger-Aliassime. And then he made the quarters at Queen's Club, but he had a cortisone shot for his back. He was doing acupuncture. It was really bothering. It was lower, then it was upper back pain. He was having massages every day, and he just could not get it feeling good. And, you know, the first round had held up all right. The second round was feeling even better. The third round, it was practically, you know, fine. And when Milos, you know, before the tournament, he said, I haven't played one tournament this year where I felt healthy during it from start to finish, which has to be tremendously frustrating. And he really seemed that he was, by the time we talked to him on the Friday, you know, he was just a completely different tone when it came to his health. So very disappointing. The fact that he'd gotten through the first round so efficiently and then that the draw had opened up with Sasha Zverev and Kevin Anderson and even Karen Khachanov losing all the top seed. He was the top seed left in that quarter. And mm-hmm. seemed to be on a collision path with Novak Djokovic. So it's a huge opportunity squandered.
I mean, Mark, when you look at his career, I mean, he's 28 years old now. We remember him as a young guy bursting onto the scene, but he's not that anymore. And we see guys like Federer playing masterfully into their late 30s. But at what point are you concerned that, you know, if endurance and injury prevention are the concerns here, that age isn't going to help this, and there may be a tipping point where progress is going to be difficult?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big concern, I would think, for him, is that the window might be closing a little bit, and certainly there's the young generation coming up behind mm-hmm. him. There was the belief, you know, coming in here that we might see the passing of the guard. Felix Auger-Aliassime could have passed him to become the number one ranked Canadian. It did not happen here, but he's charging hard, and there's obviously the other young guys I mentioned, Zverev, you know, Dominic Thiem, Stefanos Tsitsipas, who are coming up, who are seen as maybe more prominent contenders to win a Grand Slam right now. And I think that he's still a contender if he's healthy at Wimbledon, for sure. The Australian Open's been the other tournament that he's been a real threat at, and it falls at the beginning of the season where he's coming off the off season and he's rested and he's usually healthy at that time. And then, of course, Wimbledon, you know, tends to favor his game. So Wimbledon is probably a place where even later in his career, if he catches lightning in a bottle, kind of does what Marin Cilic did in the 2014 U.S. Open and play just out of his mind for 2 weeks, he can win that Grand Slam. But the opportunities are starting to dry up for sure, and that's got to be a concern that weighs on him.
I don't know that Raonic gets credit for being as good as he was. And I don't want to say at his peak, because that might still come. But when you look back at his career to this point, there's so many near misses like today. Right? There's yeah. so many yeah. there's so many times when you say, not that Raonic got beaten by Nadal or Federer or Djokovic, but he was right there and didn't close the deal.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's been rough. It's been a rough go for him. I mean, you do think about his career, and it's pretty remarkable to rise to number three in the world at one point in this golden age of tennis. I mean, you can't take a lot away from him. I mean, he's maximized, you know, the body that he has does not necessarily translate well to tennis. He's a big guy. He's clopping all over the court. And I think that he has worked hard to improve his movements, to make sure that he's getting the most out of his body. But yeah, there's been just moments, you know, five setters don't necessarily lend themselves to his style play, to his body type, and he's worn down and lost some real heartbreakers, and I'm sure that just will fuel him more. But yeah, there's been a few that I'm sure are going to haunt him when his career is done.
So what do you, I mean, obviously Felix had a nice tournament going there, a lot of hope that he's going to be the next great Canadian player. Obviously Shapovalov will have something to say about that, but what do you make of his rise here, and what can we look forward to for the rest of the summer for him?
Yeah, I think he's probably the best prospect Canada's ever produced in tennis at this age, to have the hype around him and to have backed it up for a good chunk. Now, it's interesting, he was pretty honest when he lost on on Friday when he lost to Hugo Humbert, who's someone who's ranked in the 60s, who he's favored to beat. And he said, you know, I basically, you know, let the pressure get to me, and I had just a terrible day, one of my worst days of the year. And, he was really down, because he would have played Djokovic today, and that was a big moment, and everyone was expecting him to get there. But he's really captivated. He seems to have everything, right? He's already physically mature. He seems to be the perfect build for it. He moves amazing on the court. He has all the weapons. His serve is excellent, and he had a tremendous grass court season. Grass is usually a surface that can take a while. Even Milos Raonic, who has a game for grass, took a few Wimbledons to get comfortable on the surface. It's slick, harder to move, and he made a final in Stuttgart, made a semifinal at Queen's Club, and has really seemed to be a mature kid and handled all the hype and handled everything well. Certainly, there's still growing pains to come, but just in terms of whoever you talk to on the grounds, like you go by, you know, reporters or even other players, and they're like, this kid is, he's going to be special. So there's high hopes for him. You never know. Right now, the one of the big storylines just in general in tennis is that the young generation can't seem to break through, against the big three. And even today, it was kind of, they were toying with their opponents. The big three, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, only faced one break point combined in just smoking their opponents today in the round of 16, and it looks like they're all going to get through. So Felix is a guy who's definitely the face, one of the faces of that next generation, and one of the guys, you know, Djokovic himself said he's my favorite next generation guy. He's the guy that I think I have the most highest hopes for. So that's really high praise from Novak Djokovic for Felix Auger-Aliassime.
The big three have won the last 10 Grand Slams in men's singles.
Incredible.
You go back to Stan Wawrinka at the U.S. Open in 2016 to find the last guy not in the big three. So you've been in London now for, what, 10 days?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
What's the most interesting thing you've done in London?
Interesting thing we've done. Last night we had a lovely dinner. Our landlord here, that the flat we rented, invited us over. I'm with photojournalist Dean Willers, who went up there. We were saying we're going to stay for 5 minutes, and we ended up staying the whole night, had a lovely chat with his family. They had said it was a party, and we were the only ones who showed up, so we...
That's the most interesting thing you've done in London in a week. You went to someone's house for dinner. You went to your house for dinner.
Well, it's two floors up. But other than obviously watching the great tennis that has been on display at the All England Club. But that's been off the court the most interesting thing, I would say.
That's riveting stuff, Masters, I tell you. What a life.
You are just living the life, my friend.
Yeah, it's a thrill, a second joy ride out here at the All England Club at SW19, as you said. So I'm just trying to keep my head, you know?
Yeah, you do that, young man.
Hey, try and fit a trivia night in or something.
Yeah, trivia. I went to a shoe polish store.
Wow.
I'm just trying to stay busy.
Whoa. Don't blow yourself out, Mark. All right, that is TSN's least interesting man, Mark Masters. Keep up the good work. Keep watching the tennis. We'll see you later.
Will do.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. You know, sometimes you send guys on the road and just... Good for him, huh?
At least you came on the show, you're talking about the Irish whiskey you got from in a bet with an NHL GM. The sports media business used to be filled with, hard drinking,
cigarettes,
fun-loving, crazy living guys. And now it's just guys like Masters and Siegel.
He brings Tupperware to every Leaf game.
That's true.
People don't know that. Mark Masters brings his dinner in a Tupperware container every night to Leaf game.
It's generally like a sandwich.
It's like what you'd feed a rabbit. It's like celery and
celery,
carrots.
Maybe a red pepper now and then if he's feeling crazy. Like, that's what this media industry has become. What's wrong with us?
I know, like in the old days, who were your mentors? Like when you came along in 98.
Dave Perkins. Now Perk had some fun times. You want to hear some stories about drinking with Billy Martin and after a Yankee game back in the 70s.
I went to the Masters with Perkins.
Oh, those early 90s. You'll have a good time if you're with Perkins.
Yeah.
Not with Masters. You'd have a terrible time with Masters.
Well, you'd have a very clean.
It'd be pleasant.
Yeah.
You love Masters, like you'll treat him like your brother, like he's a great guy, but he's no fun.
No, like that's the thing, right? Like you and I, we've been in Helsinki, we were in Prague together.
That's right. Like those were good times.
We've had good times. I think he just works a lot.
He just works too much.
Well, I don't think you can say that. I think we need to emphasize that having a good work ethic is very important, but it's okay to go out and have some fun once in a while.
Well, that's the thing. You got to fit it
now,
in.
Now, the guys in the old days, so I started in 83 in Alberta. when guys would show up with both eyes in one socket, you know, for the night before and couldn't see what was going on. That was a different time.
My early days in the 90s, even, you would still have guys who had like a bottle of whiskey in their desk drawer.
And chain smoking.
And would pull it out and then.
And chain smoking on the air. If you went to bed at 10, like when I started out, if you were on the road with the crew, you went to bed at 10 o'clock, like you were ostracized.
Yes, exactly. Like it was your professional duty to put a shift in at night.
Yeah, and play guilty the next day.
You have to. I mean, we did not pass that down, is what I'm saying. It's probably on us. The guys who are sort of not the oldest guys. No, we didn't pass it down to the younger guys like Masters and Siegel. Now they're living like rabbits.
I think generally in life, people aren't, and probably for the better, it's probably better that people don't live. Like, you know, 24-ounce steaks are not good for you.
They're not?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know,
now and then, it can't hurt.
Stay up till 3 in the morning. Drinking large amounts of alcohol is not good for you.
Not every night.
And I don't smoke, but I mean, you know, obviously smoking's not good for you.
Apparently not.
No, although it does give you a good, I mean, we have a couple minutes here. So Dan Kelly, the legendary, the late Dan Kelly, I had dinner with him one night, a group of us, at Bookbinders in Philadelphia. Legendary Philly steakhouse.
For sure.
He smoked like 6 or 7 cigarettes. He had, I don't know, 4 or 5 beers. And when his meal came, it was a steak with a baked potato and asparagus. Mm-hmm. And there was a butter stick on the table. He put a cube of butter on his asparagus, a cube of butter on his potato, and then he buttered his steak. I'd never seen anyone butter a steak before.
Butter the steak?
He buttered his steak.
Some of the fancy joints, they'll throw that old, compound butter on top of the steak.
That was old school broadcasting.
Yeah, butter, it turns out,
we'll
it's not bad
We'll bring
for
it back. You're back here on Friday? We'll bring it back. You come in. I want you to come in hungover as a rat on front. Like I want you to reek of alcohol, wearing the same clothes you wore the night before when you come in on Friday. Okay,
sounds good. I'll try. I'll try my best.
All right, there you go. You're using Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and watching on TSN 2. Old school. See, that's some old school. 80s, 70s, 80s Van Halen.
Oh, definitely 80s.
80s, yeah. Hair band. Couple things we should get to before we go today. No Proline best bets today because there's no games.
Good point.
You can't bet in the home run derby. You can.
Not on Proline.
Why wouldn't the Canadian Football League have a game tonight? So this is tonight and Wednesday are the only two nights when the Big Four aren't playing. When there's no Major League Baseball, obviously no NBA or NHL, no NFL. So there's really not much on the calendar tonight. Why wouldn't you play tonight?
This is a really good point you bring up, Gord. I have no idea. I mean, I guess you could make the case the CFL doesn't generally play on Mondays outside of Labor Day.
It's been done. I mean, the Argos played a regular season game, I think, on Monday last year.
Okay. So if they do play on Mondays, then there's really no leg to stand on. This would be a prime opportunity to get eyeballs on a night when people are flipping around looking for something, right, and there's nothing else on.
Right. So there's that. So I guess that we'll fix. When we run sports, it's all going to be different.
It will be all be better.
It'll be an open bar by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
I think we came off in the last segment as advocating unhealthy lifestyles, which does concern me somewhat because we do have a responsibility to young people to not advocate some of the things that went on in past years.
Everything in moderation, kids. Yes, everything in moderation.
Including moderation.
Exactly. Moderation.
Moderation in small amounts is fine. Women's World Cup wrapped up in the weekend. The United States defeated the Netherlands 2-0. So the United States has won the last two Women's World Cup, but only 4 out of 8. And I think there's a temptation here to say that, well, it's like women's hockey where only two countries dominate. 4 different countries have won the Women's World Cup out of the 8. I think it's very competitive. I thought the greatest thing about the Women's World Cup watching it was seeing stadiums so full of women watching sports.
Yeah.
Like the cheering was different. The voices were different. That to me is tremendous.
That is tremendous. I remember talking to John Herdman, who was obviously the coach of Canada's women's national team until he became the coach of Canada's men's national team recently. And when he was talking about the road forward for women's soccer in this country and in others, his idea was that women have to run it. Like women.
Right.
And women need to drive it.
Female officials.
Female officials, female managers. And this was obviously, you know, a man coaching women, talking about how ultimately he'd like to see women coaching women.
Yeah.
And because his point was, and I think it was really well taken, women get it. Like, women get women's sports in a way that men don't get women's sports.
Yes.
And that's not to say men shouldn't watch women's sports, because obviously this was a great tournament. I enjoyed watching these games. But I think his point was it shouldn't be. Traditionally, women's sports have been run by men. And he thinks the real evolution will be when they're run by women.
Yeah, and I think that we've seen that with women's hockey, right?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, having women coaching, having women officials, women executives is really important. But the quality of play was really high.
It was good.
It was terrific.
And the beauty of it.
At the end of the day, that's what it's got to do. It's got to stand on its own. It doesn't have to be. It drives me nuts when people compare it. Oh, it's not as good as the men's, or this is different.
No,
it's just different.
That's not the point.
It's just a different game. And it can be. If you watch two evenly matched teams competing, that's a great sporting event.
It was a great sporting event. And I love the fact that the U.S. was such a divisive force.
They were, because they were the Darth Vaders of this tournament.
They really were. I mean, from the showboating against the ties in that whatever,
and
it was
the diving for,
the diving, and obviously tangling with the commander in chief of the United States of America didn't hurt either.
But really, who doesn't these days?
That's true.
Really, like, you're really nobody if you haven't tangled.
Get in line.
If you're not tangling with 45, who are you?
What really? Are you doing out there?
Thank you for coming in. We'll see you Friday.
Looking forward to it.
I'm here all week. We'll see what happens. Something big's going to happen, and Hayes will call in before the end of the week. So sitting in for Brian Hayes, I'm Gordon Miller with Dave Peschuk. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, watching on TSN 2 and on the TSN app.